listening to ESL Talk, a podcast made for English teachers by English teachers.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, welcome to another new episode of ESL Talk. We're rolling along really well in Season 6, and we have another great episode for you today where we're talking about IELTS, we're talking about misconceptions and how to better prepare students for IELTS with our guest Sarah Omar. She's a real expert in this field and has a lot of knowledge about the test, so hopefully she'll be able to provide a little bit more insight and a little bit more expertise into IELTS if you teach it or if it's something you're thinking about teaching in the future. So really excited for that interview coming up in just a minute or two. Before we get into that, as always, just a few housekeeping tasks to do and a few things just to remind you of, just to make sure that you're getting the most out of the podcast. First of all, if you're not following us on Instagram, please do. You can find us at ESL Talk Podcast, where we post our videos. You can find out a little bit more about each of our guests, connect with our guests, and also get access to all our episodes if you need them. They're all up there on our Instagram page, along with our website, which is esl-talk.com. On the website, you can apply to be a guest, like Sarah did, like a lot of our guests have done. Just click the button, be a guest, fill in a few details, and then we'll arrange a time to meet with you, to talk to you about your area of English, your passion, your expertise, something that you'd like to share with our audience. And finally, don't forget our sponsor, which is esl-curriculum.com. There you can access 600 plus interactive, ready-to-teach, off-the-shelf lessons. So if you're an online English teacher looking to cut down on your planning time and your preparation time, then this is a perfect solution for you. So just go to esl-curriculum.com. Start your free two-week trial, and no matter what you teach, whether it's kids, business English, speaking, writing, anything else IELTS related, it's all covered in the package and in the website, esl-curriculum.com. Check them out, please. So before we get into today's interview with Sarah, just one more important piece of business. If you are interested in teaching IELTS or test preparation and you'd like to know a little bit more about how to do this, where to get started, maybe how to build a curriculum, how to market yourself, and how to learn about the tests in a little bit more detail, then if you go to our website, esl-talk.com, we do have a specific test prep program that we have put together to help teachers like you who might need help getting started with this process. So all you need to do is go to the website, esl-talk.com, and there is a link there called Test Prep Program. All the details and information are there. You can find out about the program, and you can also reach out to me as well. If you'd like to know more, we'd love to be able to work with you and help you with test prep as well. All right, so let's get into this week's interview with Sarah, and let's find out about misconceptions, myths in IELTS, and how she prepares her students for IELTS as well.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Alrighty, I am here with our guest today, Sarah. Thank you so much for joining us today, Sarah.
Thank you, Daniel. Thank you for having me on the show.
Yes, I'm very happy to talk to you about a topic that's very close to my own heart, which is IELTS misconceptions and how to prepare effectively for IELTS. So before we get into that in depth, could you share a little bit with us about your journey and what inspired you to get involved in IELTS and maybe some myths and misconceptions that you commonly hear about?
Okay, well, it's kind of a funny story. One day I was pulled in by my manager in their office and they told me that they needed someone to cover an IELTS class. And I had never taught IELTS before in my life. It was just general English all the time, conversation English sometimes, business English, but never any exam prep of any sorts. So I panicked. I was really scared. Because I know that this is like high stakes course and people pay a lot of money in order to achieve the required band scores. So I was like, okay, what should I do? I have no clue what I should do. Should I plan? Should I just go into class? And then I sat down with my manager and a few other colleagues and they started giving me some tips. Mm-hmm. The tips were all focused on like exam prep, exam techniques.
Right.
Let's just give them as much study practice as possible. So this is when it started to hit me that a lot of people are actually doing that without realizing that they're not really helping their students. Students go, they take the exam, they come back with the same band score, it doesn't budge. So there was something wrong with the process, either in our teaching or in the courses that we were delivering back then. So then the idea of misconceptions came through. And all over the years, I was like taking notes from my practice in the classroom, from observing other teachers that I was training, even some untrustworthy information flying around on the internet most of the time, giving people the same tips and tricks, thinking that there's a shortcut for teaching IELTS when there's really none of this at all. It's just a big hoax.
Yes. Because everything you're saying is extremely valid and extremely true in a lot of senses. So thank you for sharing that. And it's funny that you mentioned that one day you were called in and asked to do this, because this seems to be the story for a lot of people, actually.
Yes.
And how they got started doing it as well. So we've touched on misconceptions that these hacks, these tricks, they don't really exist. It's kind of a myth, but it's shared a lot, and it is a little bit dangerous for students taking the test as well. What are some of these misconceptions that you've heard or you've kind of learned about over the years?
Okay, so the first one I just shared is that just go in the classroom with some practice tests, give them to your students, check their band score, that what they have achieved, like using, especially if you're teaching the receptive skills, reading and listening, just give them the answer key, they check, and then they figure out, okay, I achieved really badly, or, oh, okay, I achieved well, which was most of the time not what the story is, because students came where I was working, they were coming with a lot of issues with all their skills, basically.
Yes.
So this is the first misconception. How does this affect teaching? Well, basically, the teacher relies a lot on testing versus teaching or developing the actual skills. So they don't really plan, or they go online to get some ready-made lesson plans, which is what I used to do, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Ready-made lesson plans full of fun activities and cutouts in order to fill in the time. So that would be, if you're teaching a two-hour class, the first hour goes to testing, then checking the answers. Then the second hour is just some kind of fun interactive activities to help the students not feel bored or demotivated.
Wow. So where is the actual teaching taking place there?
Exactly. So there was not much teaching, which brings me to the next misconception. That a lot of teachers don't know that there's a difference between teaching an exams class or an exams course and a general English one.
100%. Yeah. How does this affect their approach then? What is their approach?
The same? Basically, yeah, definitely. So with general English, there's a lot of grammar input and vocabulary, which is lacking a little bit in some of these kind of courses that just rely on testing and that's it. And also, you give them a lot of, again, another mistake that happens in general English classes that some teachers, when they're teaching a receptive skills lesson, they just give their students some comprehension questions, listen, read, answer, that's it. There is no skills development. So the same happens actually in the IELTS course. There's no skills development and a lot of reliance on testing rather than teaching. So that creates something called backwash effect. This is basically what the students feel when they are being tested all the time. There's no feedback given. They're just getting the same score over and over again. And then they feel extremely demotivated and they feel like, okay, there's no hope of getting this course or taking the exam.
Yes. I'm writing these things down because all these words resonate with me so much and they're a little bit traumatic to hear because I've heard these stories so many times. I've witnessed this in classrooms as well. It's very, very demotivating, not just for you as a teacher, but also for students because they don't really understand why they're getting the score because,
right.
You know, a lot of times when I start teaching students with IELTS is, let's look at the band descriptors, let's break them down, let's see where you're at now and what you have to do to get to your level. And so many of them have like, what is this? What are you showing me? I don't understand this chart. I'm like,
right.
If you don't know how you're going to be assessed, how could you ever reach your score, you know?
Exactly. And this brings me to the next misconception, which is a lot of teachers think that the band descriptors are not important at all and they're just for the examiners. So what they end up doing in the classroom is that they either don't go through them, they don't explain them, they don't break them down, because actually the public band descriptors that you can download online for free requires a lot of explanation, and you can actually design or plan your course around them, like you just said, where the student is. Like, what is their current English level versus what they are trying to achieve and how they can achieve that? So I used to think as well, I'm a culprit here, that those band descriptors, they're not important at all. I never showed them once on the boards, never went through them with my students up until like later on when I started understanding how to teach IELTS. And never gave them much thought. Like, I really thought that this was basically for the examiner to use.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, this is the foundation of everything with the preparation. And again, that is all the examiner is going to use. So why not work to that instead of trying to oversimplify something that's actually quite simple when you break it down into the different sections or the different parts, right? So I think that's something that's not really looked at enough and not really thought about enough, and it's a real issue and it causes a lot of problems. Now, in terms of, you know, one myth or one thing that jumps out to you, what is an example of a particularly pervasive myth and its debunking? And how have you managed to debunk that now, knowing what you know now?
Okay, here's a very common one. IELTS is a speed test. It's just about learning how to manage your time. Once you do that, you're good to go. This sounds a little bit naive, but for a point of time, I thought, okay, I can't really expect my students to achieve whichever score they are trying to achieve during a period of 4 weeks or 2 weeks, sometimes if I was teaching an intensive course. So I thought maybe there was a hack. And this hack would be to train the students to answer the questions, especially in the reading part, when you're doing the true, false, not given and the matching heading section. I thought that I could teach them like a few tricks to help them speed read without really having to understand much of the text.
Right.
So at some point, I was actually teaching them how to match synonyms from the question or from the statement in the question to particular parts of the text. Okay. And this would obviously help them read much faster, but it wasn't producing the results that I wanted them to produce. And so they ended up like parrot reading. Like they weren't really, again, I wasn't developing their skills as much as I was just trying to improve their speed reading, again, by teaching them the cliched skimming and scanning techniques, which if people rely too much on, then they're not really going to achieve anything. IELTS is tricky that way. So there has to be some kind of vocabulary and grammar input. It's not just a course where I just go and sit down and get bombarded with the exam techniques and strategies under time constraints, which would produce nothing in the end, except again, backwash effect. The next thing is not falling into the trap of teaching all learners in your classroom in the exact same way, but treat without any kind of differentiation. And I think this is like a given in any kind of course, but with IELTS in specific, you've got students who are preparing for two different kinds of tests, most likely academic in general. They are like not 100% the same, but still, like the general training reading module is different from the writing task one, for example. Another point is they don't all come in the same level. You will have some students with B1, some students B2, maybe some students C1. So there has to be some element of differentiation. And lastly, they are not all preparing for the sit with the same motivation, especially people who are taking the academic module. Most of them are looking to get like a 7 to a 7.5. So how can we do this? Like, how can we teach all those different types of people in the short constraints of the time of the course?
We're using this one-size-fits-all approach to teach all these different abilities, levels, motivations. It's not really possible. So it's always a good idea to try to work with students at their level. Otherwise, you'll lose the ones that are too low for what you're teaching. And then the ones that are higher, they won't be as motivated or as attracted to what you're teaching. So it's very difficult. But I would say, yes, definitely teach at the level. That's a really good point.
And although a lot of trainers used to advocate for like putting students, when grouping students, putting the weaker ones with the stronger ones, this didn't always work, to be honest, especially when they were peer checking in the writing. So if I'm a weak student, I wouldn't say weak, but you know, my level is weaker than yours. You're a C1, for example, and I'm a B1. And my teacher is letting us peer work together and check our writing. How am I supposed to know your mistakes if I'm not aware of my mistakes? That didn't really produce anything, to be honest. So it doesn't always work. Maybe with the speaking, one of them can play examiner, examinee and give feedback. But with the writing, this doesn't always work, especially with writing task two.
Absolutely. And every student is different. They have a different level. They have different strengths and weaknesses. So again, you're not necessarily setting them up for failure, but you're making it much more difficult for them to succeed if you're approaching it in this way.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
So how would you make sure, or how would teachers make sure that they are providing the most accurate and up-to-date information about IELTS to their students? Because again, I see every day very poor advice, very misleading advice, even wording and phrasing. I hear people say, I failed, you are going to fail. Well,
yes.
How can you fail a test that doesn't have a pass or fail
exactly.
outcome? It doesn't really make sense to me. So how can teachers ensure they're up to date and they're teaching relevant skills and appropriate, giving appropriate information about IELTS?
Okay, well, assuming your school is not providing in-service training of IELTS, then you're going to have to take the leads and be an autonomous teacher and put yourself in the student's shoes and study for the exam as if you were actually taking the exam. This is what I did. It's a lot of work, but I guarantee you're going to learn a lot as a teacher about yourself.
Thank you so much for saying this, Sarah. Yes.
Like I said before, there's no really shortcut even for teachers when they're preparing for teaching IELTS.
I'm so glad you share this message, because I share this message as well. And so many teachers have been unhappy or felt offended or slighted when I've said, well, have you taken the test? Like, have you tried to do it and go through that process? Not necessarily because you want to get all nines. I mean, that's extremely difficult to do. But if you at least go through the process, then you can give better information, you can give better insights, you can share your experience, you can empathize with students, you can share with them what to expect. I mean, the analogy I always use is, if I want to learn to drive, would I want to learn to drive from someone who's watched videos about driving a car? Or would I like to learn to drive from someone who's driven a car for many years, has taken the test themselves, has gone through lots of training? I'd want to do the second option, right? It doesn't really make sense when teachers who want to teach IELTS are not prepared to take the test themselves. And it's a real gripe of mine, because again, unless you've gone through that process, how can you really give the best information? Having gone through that process to take the test yourself, Sarah, did you then find afterwards that you were better able to support and guide students who were taking the test?
This definitely helped. It wasn't the only thing though. There's a different element to, because you're at the end of the day, you're a teacher. When you're taking the test, you are a student. You're not a teacher, and these are like not exactly the same shoes you're wearing or the same hat. One time you are being a student, you are receiving information, you're trying to give information, but when you are a teacher, you're trying to train others to understand questions, exam techniques, help with different other sub skills, especially in the productive skills.
Yes.
So it did help, but receiving training, I was trained to teach the actual skills. That really helped as well. I'm not sure if all schools provide such kind of training, but I do recommend that if your school is not providing such training, that you go for it, either online or with any other school. Because at the end of the day, with IELTS, it's actually like as difficult as it is to achieve results, it's actually easy to see those results in the classroom while you're training your students. Unlike general English, it takes time to see. If you're teaching them, for example, a group of idioms, or teaching them the difference between present perfect simple and past simple, it's actually quite difficult to see the results instantaneously.
Yes, I agree. And the thing with IELTS as well is that it's much more focused on the skills that you need to reproduce and the skills you need to show. It's four elements. Whereas general English has a lot more elements. And again, they're going to be judged based on that result, that test result that they receive. So it is really different. And again, this is another reason why for general English teachers who want to go into IELTS teaching, absolutely you should, but just make sure that you're really up to date with the different ways that the test is delivered and the main differences between IELTS and general English as well. So yeah, that's a really good point that you raised just a few seconds ago. I wanted to ask you, Sarah, what advice do you have for teachers who would like to, you know, get into teaching IELTS, or they'd like to prepare to take IELTS, you know, as well? Like, what advice would you give them?
First thing is you need to build your confidence, especially if you haven't taken the test before. So at least try and study the course yourself. So treat yourself as your students, sit down with the books, read through the tips that sometimes authors add them on the margins of the pages. Try your hand at each question. You're going to struggle a little at first, but it's okay. And if you have someone who's taken the test before, you can go to for advice, or rather someone who's worked as an examiner before, especially with up-to-date exam information that Cambridge always updates. Sometimes this information is not accessible to teachers or students. So I always like to understand what's going on in the background. The second thing is you have to learn that this is a learning curve. It's going to be a learning curve for yourself. Maybe you're not going to have the most successful course at the beginning, but you're really going to learn from like trying it in and out a few times until you build your confidence, like I said earlier. Another important point is feedback. Feedback is really important for the students. They come to take it, like they pay a lot of money in order to receive this kind of feedback, whether on their writing or speaking. A lot more on their writing than speaking, I would say. In my context, a lot of people were struggling with upping their IELTS writing score. But the issue is a lot of teachers think that feedback is like just highlighting the mistakes in the writing and fixing.
No, it's not. How can a student reproduce that in a test? They can't. They don't have that support available. It's giving them the tools and strategies to be able to apply in the test, right?
Right. And that brings me back to the band descriptors. Mm-hmm. So the way we used to give feedback in our training is based on the, just like how an examiner would give feedback, but like the condensed version. So you have to look at the common mistakes that they have, for instance, with task two, and focus on the issue they are most struggling with. Ignore the grammar mistakes for once, unless this is their major issue. But I'm guessing if someone is at a B2 or C1 level, they wouldn't struggle much with grammar. It's mostly task achievement or like cohesion and coherence, maybe some issues with punctuation. So focusing on the element that is hindering the students from achieving their score, especially if they have taken the test before and they seem to be producing the same results every time they took the test.
Yep, I agree. I think that's some really sound advice. Again, that's four elements of the test, so that, you know, each element is worth 25%, for example, in writing, speaking is the same. So if there's one particular skill that's really pulling them down, then obviously spend time focusing on that one first. Try to get them all at around the same level, and then you can look at increasing instead of just saying the grammar is terrible. And then just, you know, it takes a long time to give feedback that way. So yeah, definitely break it down and give as much useful, productive feedback as possible that they can actually apply. I think that would be really helpful for students as well. So it's not, again, you know, with writing, I see a lot of students stuck on 6.5 and they say, oh, it's because I was unlucky. It's because IELTS is a scam. The examiners get incentivized to fail me, so I take it many times. Like, I mean, it, you know, this just isn't true at all. And I guess, you know, it's easy to try to blame it on other things. One other question I wanted to ask you about was EOR, about getting the test remarked. I see a lot of people do this and they say, yeah, I'm going to get it remarked and regraded. And then I say, okay. Mm-hmm. And if you don't get an increase in your grade, then what are you going to do?
It is tricky, but luckily now they have the one skill test retake. Yeah, but I'm guessing it's going to be like common in all countries soon. It's just a matter of time.
I hope so.
I think you can try it once. It wouldn't hurt anyone. It's just a matter of people who like, they need the test, and there's no way they can achieve their goals without taking the test. Those are the kinds of people who are willing, like, to pay an arm and a leg in order to, you know, do whatever they can to achieve the score. Because, unfortunately, you get those students most of the time who think that they can just prepare for the exam 1 week before the test.
I see it all the time. Yes.
Yeah. And then succeed or get the score that they want. And it's a process, and it's a journey for both student and teacher.
It is. I think it's really... Sorry, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say again that there really are no shortcuts.
100%.
And you're going to have to try.
Yes. This is the biggest mindset shift. When you, you know, as a teacher, and for our listeners, if when you teach a student or you start working with a student, make sure you are very honest and open with what they need to do and their expectations, because a lot of the time teachers will just say, yeah, I can help you, I can get you a band 7 in a month. Well, it's possible, but not for everyone.
Very
and everyone's different.
Online.
Yes, it is.
This is very common. A lot of people are setting their courses like that. And
yes,
this is really important for teachers and students. Be careful of the information you're getting online.
Yes,
you need to only be getting your information from trusted sources, and avoid all other kind of websites that most of the time, if not all the time, are giving you wrong information.
Yes, exactly. This is what I was going to say.
Information.
Yes. Yeah. Be careful of websites that say we can guarantee you a band 7 in 1 month or 2 months. And then they'll support that with myths and misconceptions that we've talked about. And they'll also give out of date information, and they'll say things that aren't true in order to get you to sign up for them. And again, one, obviously I'm not going to say who it is, but one IELTS guru expert, was doing this kind of thing. And I did ask them, you know, why are you continuing to give false information? And then they said, well, I have a secret. I have a process that works for all my students. And I'm thinking, well, it turned out the secret was just to, if you don't get your score, apply for remarking. And I was thinking, well, if
so that's
remarking,
the secret.
Yeah. And I was like, well, what happens if they don't get a score increase? They've spent 2 or 3 weeks waiting for the results. They've spent more money to get it remarked. What would be the advantage of that? It might work for some, but it's not going to work for everyone. And the student's stuck and they're in the same position. And this is why I also... So go ahead.
It's a wheel of fortune kind of situation. Like,
keep
spinning the wheel.
This is why I say as well, you know, make sure you actually work with people who do know what they're talking about. So if you're looking for a teacher, have they taken the test and scored at least 8 overall, I would say? Have they worked as an examiner before? Great. Have they done training, the IDP training or the British Council training? You know, how have they examined speaking? Have they examined writing? Have they examined both? Again, look for these kinds of things. These are going to be good indicators. You don't just want to work from, you know, John, who took IELTS and got an 8.5. That's great. But does that make them a good teacher? Probably not. No. Think about sports. You know, a good football player, do they always make a good coach or a manager? No. Vice versa. Doesn't always work that way. So, you know, set yourself up for success as a student. And if you're a teacher, you know, as a listener, if you're thinking about teaching IELTS or teaching test prep and you feel like you need to improve your skills, then of course, reach out. We can help you with that. But just make sure you're being honest, you're being open, and you're being, you know, accurate with the information you give. That would be something I'd really stress as well.
One last tip, most important thing, you really need to understand what it is, skills development.
Yes.
If you haven't, if you are at CELTA level right now, then it's really important that you start reading about teaching the 4 skills, sub skills, especially when it comes to speaking and listening and reading. Reading is not just about scanning and skimming techniques. It's more than that. So yeah, just up your knowledge and information.
Yes, 100%. So I mean, we've been a little bit critical, and we've really gone into some of the negative sides of this, but let's try to focus on some positive, Sarah. Could you share some success stories or transformations you've witnessed in teachers who adopted these approaches, how they changed their approach? Because again, people, you know, I see a lot of teachers who base their philosophy on other teachers. So it's kind of teachers who think they know what works, and then other teachers building off other teachers who think they know what works. And we get this, you know, we get this butterfly effect of a really dangerous and, you know, potentially misleading market. So what would you say about some successes or some transformations you've seen?
I think, like I said before, when you sit down to study the course yourself and start learning about the complexity of the question types, the different kind of skills you're being tested on. So I remember when I was self-studying, there was this course book that I was using. I'm not going to mention names. It was a great course book, though. In the contents section, the author went into great detail about listing down which question is testing which subskill. Up until then, I didn't really know what each question was testing, really. I was just blindly helping the students with, again, testing and testing and testing. The more you practice, the more you get scores, et cetera, et cetera. So this was really like a turning point in my teaching. I started transferring this information to them, and then they started understanding, and there was like a light bulb moment. Huh. Okay, I know how MCQs work now. I know how they don't work. This is really important. So that really helped a lot with them at least feeling confident, because when you're teaching this kind of exam, you're building their confidence as well, because they really believe that they're not going to achieve the score that they want.
Yes. Yes. 100%. I love that. What is one takeaway you'd like to share with teachers about IELTS misconceptions or about IELTS myths and things that we've discussed today?
One takeaway would be is to not rely on popular tips and tricks that are being shared online, on YouTube, on these websites. Please steer away from them.
So what should they rely on? Where are they going to get their information from? Or who are they going to get their information from?
So, like I said earlier, either trusted sources from well-known websites, like the ones you mentioned, from published course books by well-known authors or well-known publishing houses, which we all know about. And if they can get trained either at their school or by an external course provider, that will be very, very useful. It will add a lot to their experience. Their teaching is going to change. You're not just going to be a general English teacher. You're also going to be an exams teacher, which is going to add a lot to your knowledge and experience.
Yes.
I think there is no really like a secret or hidden technique about how to prepare to become an IELTS teacher, except just to be prepared, study like a student, take the test, get trained.
Yes, great advice. Thank you for sharing that, Sarah. How can our listeners get in touch with you? How can they find out more about what you've mentioned today? And maybe how could they ask you some questions if they have some?
Well, you can find me on LinkedIn. Just search for Sarah Omar, and I will be so happy to get in touch with anybody who's interested in learning more about IELTS or anything else.
Amazing. Thank you so much for the discussion. It was really interesting and insightful. Very reassuring as well to hear from a like-minded IELTS professional. So thank you for that, Sarah. And I really enjoyed the chat. Thanks.
So a big thank you there to Sarah Omar, who was kind enough to share with us her knowledge and expertise on the topic of IELTS. And I hope you found that useful and also insightful as well as a listener. Thank you again for listening to this episode. Don't forget to subscribe for new episodes each and every Wednesday. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, if you are looking for help with test preparation and it's something you might want to get into more, just visit our website, esl-talk.com. There you can find out more about our test prep teacher program. You can also listen to all our previous episodes, and you can also apply to be a guest as well. Just click the link, fill in a couple of details, and we can get in touch with you so you can be on a future episode. That is it for this week's episode. We will see you next week. Thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe for even more ESL teaching content.